And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's August the 11th. The 223rd day of the year. 142 days remain to the end of the year. You know, for a good part of my life, I was proud to serve this country. But thanks to our current president and the clowns he has appointed, we're a banana republic, and the world is seeing us that way. 2 days ago, the FBI raided the home of former President Trump. A search warrant signed by a judge appointed by former President Obama based on a CI report that told them exactly where what they needed to get was at. But in spite of knowing exactly where everything was at, they spent 2 hours going through the First Lady's underwear drawer. Either she's got a hell of a lot of underwear or FBI agents were amusing themselves. They showed up with machine guns. Didn't tell the president's attorneys they were coming. Told the Secret Service, apparently. But still felt the need to show up with machine guns. And what did the current president say? I didn't know anything about that. Nobody told me they were going to raid his house. So it sounds to me we got an attorney general who needs to be sitting home writing his memoirs. And the head of the FBI needs to go back to the police academy and learn about due process and all that kind of good stuff. And the agents that took part in the raid need to go to the FBI office in South Dakota. This is absolutely ludicrous. And it's all done to keep him from running for office against Biden in 2024. I mean, there's no excuse for what took place. And no matter how they dress it up, how much lipstick they put on the pig, it's still the actions of a banana republic. Well, as I said, today's August the 11th. In 3114 BC, the Mesoamerican long count calendar, used by several pre-Columbian Mesoamerican civilizations, such as the Mayas, begins. 2492 BC, traditional date of the defeat of Bel by Hak, progenitor and founder of the Armenian nation. 106 AD, the southwestern part of Dacia, modern Romania, becomes a Roman province. It's called Roman Dacia. 355, Claudius Silvanus, accused of treason, proclaims himself Roman emperor against Constantius II. 490, Battle of Adda. The Goths under Theodoric the Great and his ally, Alaric II, defeat the forces of Odoacer on the Adda River. That's near Milan. 923, the Kemetians of Bahrain capture and pillage the city of Basra. 1315, the Great Famine of Europe becomes so dire that even the King of England has difficulties getting bread for himself and his entourage. And we're heading for another one. 1332, the Wars of Scottish Independence, the Battle of Duplin Moor. Scots under Dunnall II, Earl of Mar, routed by Edward Balliol. 1473, the Battle of Otuque Bel. Mehmed the Conqueror of the Ottoman Empire decisively defeats Uzun Hasan of Ak Koyun. 1492, Rodrigo de Borgia is elected as head of the Catholic Church, taking the name Pope Alexander VI. 1675, Franco-Dutch War, forces the Holy Roman Empire to defeat the French in the Battle of Kanzerbruch. 1786, Captain Francis Light establishes the British colony of Penang in Malaysia. 1804, Francis II assumes the title of the first Emperor of Austria. 1812, Peninsula War. French troops engage British Portuguese forces in the Battle of Majahadahonda. 1813, in Colombia, Juan de Corral declares the independence of Antioquia. 1858, the Alger in the Bernese Alps is ascended for the first time by Charles Barrington, accompanied by Christian Almer and Peter Boren. 1871, an explosion of gun cotton occurs in Stowmarket, England, killing 28 people. 1898, Spanish-American War. American troops enter the city of Mayaguez in Puerto Rico. 1918, World War I, the Battle of Amiens ends. 1919, Germany's Weimar Constitution signed into law. 1920, the Latvian-Soviet Peace Treaty, which relinquished Russia's authority and pretenses to Latvia, signed, ending the Latvian War of Independence. 1929, Babe Ruth becomes the first baseball player to hit 500 home runs in his career with a home run at League Park in Cleveland, Ohio. 1934, the first civilian prisoners arrive at the federal prison on Alcatraz Island. 1942, actress Hedy Lamarr and composer George Antheil receive a patent for a frequency-hopping spread-spectrum communication system that later become the basis for modern technology and wireless telephones, two-way radio communications, and Wi-Fi. In 1942, they had that technology. 1945, Poles in Krakow engage in a pogrom against Jews in the city. They kill one and wound five. 1952, Hussein bin Talal is proclaimed King of Jordan. 1959, Sheremetyevo International Airport, the second largest airport in Russia, opens up. 1960, Chad declares independence from France. 1961, the former Portuguese territories in India of Dadra and Nagar Haveli are merged to create the Union Territory Dadra and Nagar Haveli. 1962, Vostok 3 launches from the Baikonur Cosmodrome, and cosmonaut Adrian Nikolaev becomes the first person to float in microgravity. 1965, race riots begin in the Watts area of Los Angeles, California. It became known later on as the Watts riots. 1969, Apollo 11 astronauts are released from a three-week quarantine following their liftoff from the moon. 1972, Vietnam War. Last U.S. ground combat unit leaves South Vietnam. 1975, East Timor. Governor Mario Lemos Pires of Portuguese Timor abandons the capital, Dil, following a coup by Timorese Democratic Union and the outbreak of civil war between UDT and Fretilin. 1979, the two Aeroflot Tupolev Tu-134s collided with the Ukrainian city of, couldn't begin to pronounce it, and they crash, killing all 178 people on board. 1982, a bomb explodes on Pan Am Flight 830 en route from Tokyo to Honolulu, Hawaii, killing one passenger and injuring 15 others. 1984, we begin bombing in 5 minutes. President Reagan, running for re-election, jokes while preparing to make his weekly Saturday address on the National Public Radio. 1992, the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota opens up. At that time, it was the largest shopping mall in the U.S. In 2000, an air rage incident occurs on board Southwest Airlines Flight 1763 when 19-year-old Jonathan Burton attempts to storm the cockpit, but he's subdued by other passengers and dies from his injuries. 2003, NATO takes over command of the peacekeeping force in Afghanistan, marking its first major operation outside the empire of Europe in its 54-year history. 2003, Jamaa Islamiyah leader Ridwan Islamuddin, better known as Hambali, is arrested in Bangkok, Thailand. 2006, Oil tanker MT Solar One sinks off the coast of Guimaras and the Negros Islands in the Philippines, causing that country's worst oil spill. 2012, at least 306 people are killed and 3,000 others injured in a pair of earthquakes near Tabriz in Iran. And in 2017, at least 41 people are killed, another 179 injured after two passenger trains collide in Alexandria, Egypt. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Christian's Feast Day, Athrak, Claire of Assisi, Flacre, Gogericus, John Henry Newman in the Church of England, Philomena, Susanna, Torinus of Evreux, Tibertus and Chromatius, Flag Day in Pakistan, Independence Day, which celebrates independence of Chad from France in 1960, and in Japan, it is Mountain Day. Let's see what else we've got. Okay. In 480 BC, Greco-Persian Wars, Battle of Artemisium, Persian naval victory over the Greeks and an engagement fought off the north coast of Euboea. In 1093, the foundation stone for the new Norman Durham Cathedral laid by Bishop William of St. Calais in England. 1304, Sea Battle of Zierikzee, Franco-Holland forces defeat the Flemish fleet. 1492, Rodrigo de Borgia becomes Pope Alexander VI. 1522, an uprising of Adel, burgheries in Austria fails. 1597, Germany throws out English salespeople. Had to teach you to try to sell something here. 1695, English and Dutch fleet capture Dunkirk. 1718, the Battle of Cape Passaro. British fleet destroys the Spanish off of Sicily. 1772, an explosive eruption blows 4,000 feet off Papandayan, Java. Kills 3,000. 1835, George B. Airy begins a 46-year term as England's Astronomer Royal. In 1860, the U.S. had its first successful silver mill in Virginia City, Nevada. 1863, Cambodia became a French protectorate. 1866, the world's first roller rink opened up in Newport, Rhode Island. 1874, Harry Parmalee patents the sprinkler head. 1877, Asa Paul discovers Mars Moon Deimos. 1885, $100,000 was raised in the U.S. for the pedestal for the Statue of Liberty. Based upon current conduct, we should replace the Statue of Liberty with a big banana. 1888, California Theater closed, now a Pactel phone store. 1896, Harvey Hubble patents the electric light bulb socket with a pull chain. 1904, German-Italian General von Trotha defeats Herero in Southwest Africa. 1904, the Russian fleet in the harbor of Port Arthur is exposed to Russian guns on the hill above the harbor. Russian ships attempt to escape but are forced back into the harbor by Japanese ships. 1907, St. Louis Cardinals pitcher Ed Carger throws a perfect game versus the Boston Doves, wins 4-0 in 7 innings. 1908, King Edward VII of Britain meets with Emperor Wilhelm of Friedrichshafen, Germany. The main point of contention is increasing size of the German Navy. 1909, the SOS is first used by an American ship, the Arapaho, off Cape Hatteras in North Carolina. 1914, John Bray patents an animation. 1919, the Green Bay Packers football club is founded by George Calhoun and Curly Lambeau, who was a head coach, named after the sponsor of the Indian Packing Company. 1919, the Weimar Republic begins in Germany. 1924, the first newsreel pictures of U.S. presidential candidates were taken on this date. 1929, Russia and the Chinese have a border, major border confrontation. 1935, the Nazis have a mass demonstration against German Jews. 1936, Chiang Kai-shek's troops conquer Canton. 1940, 38 German aircraft are shot down over England. On this same date, Germans conducted an air raid on British ports, Portland and Weymouth. 1942, British aircraft carrier HMS Eagle hit by four German torpedoes and sink in the Mediterranean Sea, 81 miles south of Mallorca. 1942, General Montgomery makes a landing on Gibraltar. 1944, the French 5th Armored Division recaptures Sees. 1944, Klaus Barbie, the Gestapo head of Lyon, France, leaves for Auschwitz. He eventually went to Argentina, where he was captured. On this day in 1945, the Allies refused Japan's offer to surrender on the condition Emperor Hirohito retains his status. 1950, King Baudouin I takes the oath as Royal Prince of Belgium. This was also the date that Ethel Rosenberg testified before the grand jury on allegations she spied for the Soviet Union. 1954, a former peace treaty ended 7 years of fighting in Indochina between the French and the communist Viet Minh. 1968, 15 Guinea Special, the last mainline steam passenger train service in Britain. Selection of British Rail steam locomotives makes a return 120-mile journey, Liverpool to Carlisle, before having their fires dropped for the last time. 1970, two Royal Ulster Constabulary officers are killed by the Irish Republican Army when they set off a booby trap bomb planted in a car near Crossmaglen in County Armagh. 1971, four people are shot dead in separate incidents in Belfast, three of them by the British Army, as violence continues following the introduction of internment in Operation Demetrius. This day in 1972, we had Cheech and Chong Day in San Antonio, Texas. I guess everybody lit up and had a nice toke. Also in 72, two IRA members were killed when the bomb they were transporting exploded prematurely. Just in 1974, a head-on collision between two buses killed 21 in Ankara, Turkey. Just in 1975, the U.S. vetoes the proposed admission of North and South Vietnam to the U.N. This day in 1976, there was a race riot in Cape Town, South Africa. 17 people died. This day in 1978, the funeral of Pope Paul VI was held in the Vatican. This day in 78, Legionnaire's disease bacteria is isolated in Atlanta. In 1982, the South African Defense Force raids southern Angola. That reference from Reagan about we begin bombing in 5 minutes. In 1984, during a radio voice test, he joked he signed legislation that would outlaw Russia forever and would begin bombing in 5 minutes. Had that played, that would have been mass chaos and confusion. In 1988, Meir Kahane re-announces U.S. citizenship to stay in the Israeli parliament. Just in 1988, Al-Qaeda is formed at a meeting between Osama bin Laden, Ayman al-Zawahiri, and Dr. Fadl in Peshawar, Pakistan. This day in 1989, Voyager 2 discovers two partial rings of Neptune. 1990, Egypt and Morocco troops land in Saudi Arabia to prevent an Iraqi invasion. This day in 1991, 400,000 demonstrate for democracy in Madagascar. 31 are killed. This day in 1997, Benin legalizes January 10th as a voodoo holiday. And let's see. In 2012, 153 people were killed and 1,300 injured in Tabriz and Nahar in Iran after two earthquakes hit up to a 6.4 magnitude. On that same day, 13 are killed and 15 injured by a lightning strike at a mosque in Bangladesh. 2013, on this date, 22 people were killed by flash floods in Kabul, Pakistan. In 2015, saw the largest ever outbreak of Legionnaire's disease in New York. 12 dead and over 100 cases in the South Bronx. In 2016, a Greenland shark was declared the oldest vertebrate animal in the world at 392 years of age by an international team of scientists. They could be trying to cure cancer, but instead they're chasing old, decrepit sharks. In 2017, Chinese crime writer Liu Yongbao after announcing a novel called Beautiful Writer Who Kills, arrested for murder of four people nearly 22 years ago. Let's see. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about what killed Cleopatra, the Queen of Egypt. She said to have died on August 10th. It was also said she was beautiful and that she met her death by clutching a poisonous snake. Unfortunately, research has shown neither fact is true. On her appearance, the ancient writer Plutarch reported Cleopatra's beauty was not altogether incomparable. It was instead her mellifluous speaking voice and irresistible charm that made her so desirable. She also possessed a formidable intellect, spoke several languages, mastered mathematics, philosophy, oratory, and astronomy. But did, in fact, she clutch a snake? Well, the assassination of Julius Caesar in Rome led to the events that caused her to die. Her demise came amid the Roman conquest of Egypt in 30 B.C. It marked the end of the Ptolemaic dynasty. It was a Macedonian Greek royal family ruled Egypt for 275 years. When her father, Ptolemy the 12th, died in 51 B.C., Cleopatra the 7th became co-regent of Egypt with her 10-year-old brother, Ptolemy the 13th. You know, members of the Ptolemaic dynasty often married within the family to preserve the purity of the bloodline, and Cleopatra was to marry both her adolescent brothers, each of whom served as co-regent at different times. In fact, historians say that her own parents were brother and sister, and certainly several of her ancestors married siblings or cousins. But she didn't always keep it in the family. One of her great lovers was Julius Caesar. That relationship resulted in a never-acknowledged son, Caesarion, who was the son of the Roman dictator. After Caesar's assassination in 44 B.C., his adopted son Octavian began a power struggle for the Roman leadership, principally against the politician and general Mark Antony, who had been one of Caesar's close allies. Now, Cleopatra was summoned to Tarsus, in modern-day Turkey, by Mark Antony, and is said to have entered the city by sailing up the Cydnus River in a decorated barge with purple sails while dressed in the robes of the Greek goddess Aphrodite. Antony and Cleopatra became allies and lovers. That eventually led to Octavian's advantage as he was able to persuade the Roman Senate Antony was a traitor under the sway of a scheming seductress. And in 32 B.C., Rome declared war on Cleopatra. Well, on September 2nd, 31 B.C., with the naval battle of Actium near Preveza in northwestern Greece, the conflict came to an end. The engagement developed into a rout for Antony and Cleopatra's combined force of 230 vessels and 50,000 sailors, and they were forced to flee to Egypt, where they bunkered up in Alexandria. The next year, Octavian laid siege to Alexandria, and outnumbered, Antony surrendered, and in the Roman tradition, he committed suicide by falling on his sword, which is what a lot of our officials have done to help our current commander-in-chief. Octavian told Cleopatra she would be taken to Rome and paraded through the streets as a trophy of his victory. Seems the prospect of that humiliation was too much for her, so on August 10th, 30 B.C., dressed in royal robes and reclining on a golden couch, she ordered that an asp, an Egyptian cobra, be brought to her hidden in a basket of figs. Now, to Egyptians, the asp was a symbol of divine royalty, and Cleopatra believed she'd become immortal if she died by allowing one to bite her. Of course, a number of historians immediately cast doubt on this account, believing she used a poisonous ointment or a vial of poison to commit suicide. Plutarch said, the truth of the matter nobody knows. Well, the interesting thing is there are so many different stories. That nobody really knows for sure. The bottom line is she died. And another victim of one of the many conspiracies that went on. Now, having ended our history segment, we were talking yesterday about Bill Hunter and Jim Kuoth, two reporters who had the opportunity to get into Ruby's apartment and wound up dying. Jim Kuoth stepped out of his shower and was hit in the head with a neck with a karate chop that killed him. Unsolved murder. And Bill Hunter was sitting in a police station, arguably one of the safest places to be, when supposedly an officer either dropped his gun or was playing quick draw and shot him in the heart. Now, there were four people that went into Ruby's apartment. George Senator, he lied about the meeting ever having taken place. Kuoth was karate chopped to death, and his notes on the JFK assassination he was putting together to write a book disappeared. Hunter was shot because a cop played around and pointed a loaded gun at him. And Tom Howard, the fourth and last person who was at Ruby's apartment that night, also died of a heart attack at the age of 48. You know, too many people who approached Ruby's role in an inquisitive way, Karen Kupchinet, Dorothy Kilgallen, the guest of George Senator at Ruby's apartment, all met untimely deaths. So you have to wonder what really was going on. Now, I mentioned Dorothy Kilgallen, a nationally syndicated columnist, used to be on What's My Line, very well known, the only journalist allowed to have an unsupervised meeting with Ruby after he was arrested. Now, her cause of death was high level of barbiturates combined with alcohol. Official verdict? Of course, suicide. Or an accidental overdose. There were no murders. Could not be. Now, she had told friends she had obtained information regarding the Kennedy assassination and would bust this case wide open. And she'd vowed to anybody that listened she'd crack the case. Only reporter had a private interview with Jack Ruby after he shot Oswald. And after that interview, she told friends she was about to blow through the Kennedy case sky high. She implied that she was saving important information from that interview and from her investigation to include in a book she's working on, which she felt certain to be a blockbuster. The book was called Murder One. Now, she was aware of the untimely and suspicious death of reporters Bill Hunter and Jim Kuoth. She gave a backup copy of her JFK chapter to her close friend, another journalist named Florence Pritchett Smith. And anybody who looked at the sign, what was seen at her death, noticed that the death scene was staged. And her book notes had vanished. The next day, her good friend Florence Pritchett Smith died, and the backup copy of the notes that she had given to her friend were never located either. Now, there were a number of inconsistencies in regard to this death. Whoever staged the crime scene at Dorothy Kilgallen's home made a number of mistakes. Now, she was a very famous news reporter whose gossip column was read by millions of people on almost a daily basis. She was so famous, she had become a Hollywood-type celebrity, appearing as a regular guest on the extremely popular TV show, What's My Line? But what made her famous as far as the Kennedy assassination was a far different matter. It was the fact that she had been trusted with highly confidential information by Jack Ruby. As we all know, the man who, on national TV no less, killed Lee Harvey Oswald. She was, in fact, the only reporter allowed an exclusive private interview with Ruby at the Dallas jail, at Ruby's request. Now, what transpired during that interview is still unknown due to her quite premature death. But right after the interview had taken place, she promised she'd break the Kennedy case wide open, and her new upcoming book would include information of a startling nature. Now, her information, apparently in reference to one of her upcoming columns that may have contained an important excerpt from her book, was specific, and her exact words were, "In 5 more days, I'm going to bust this case wide open." Now, that was the scenario the morning of the day she died. She was found dead on the third floor of her 5-story Manhattan apartment home, which was just off Park Avenue. The medical examiner determined she died from acute ethanol and barbiturate intoxication, and also noted circumstances undetermined. Now, she was linked directly to the Kennedy assassination by the fact she openly attacked the cover-up and whitewash in her very prominent newspaper column. She was the only reporter who was granted a private interview with Jack Ruby after he murdered Oswald. And she took copious notes during that interview. She was saving all her info on the Kennedy assassination for her upcoming book, which is titled Murder One, which she was sure would be a blockbuster. And she said it would blow the lid off the cover-up surrounding the assassination. Now, a version of that book, minus her Kennedy material, was published after her death. It was known she had extensive notes from her research, as well as her private interview with Jack Ruby. In fact, it was known to some of her friends she typically carried those notes around on her person because that's how important they were to her. But a search of her apartment after her death revealed no notes, no material on Kennedy. And yet everybody knew it existed. It was rumored that Dorothy's friend of many years, journalist Flo Pritchard, had a torrid affair with Jack Kennedy both before and after he became president. In fact, mutual friends reported that their romance lasted many years and was one of only two such affairs of the president that were serious and long-lasting. The other was Mary Meyer. Dorothy reportedly gave a backup copy of her notes on the JFK to Flo Pritchard. She died of leukemia November 9th. 1965, a day after Dorothy Q. Gallen was found dead. And the JFK material that Kilgallen had given her couldn't be found. Now, Kilgallen is one of the most revered reporters in the country. Her column was read by most people in Hollywood, most people in government, in fact, most people in general. Her information pipeline was incredible. Seemed to know everything about anybody. And her style was gossipy and bold, which made her column utterly fascinating and almost required reading for millions of Americans. Probably more than any other reporter at the time, she had her finger right on the pulse of what the public wanted to know about. She was the only reporter who broke a story about the hot romantic affair between Marilyn Monroe and one of the Kennedys. Next day, Marilyn was murdered. Officially, it was a suicide. And Dorothy believed she had been set up by the person who tipped her off to the affair by somebody who was trying to implicate the Kennedys in Marilyn's death. And by 1964, she seemed to be on top of something about the Kennedy assassination. She kept giving hints about the matter. Ruby himself, a TV fan of Dorothy Kilgallen, had taken a liking to her during the trial. According to a number of folks, he respected her more than any other reporter. She gained his confidence and had several conversations with him in the courtroom. She took a lot of notes at that meeting, and she bragged to friends she's about to break the case wide open and prove a conspiracy. Nobody ever learned the contents of her notes because she died shortly afterwards under very mysterious circumstances. She's only 52. Had a reputation as a steely, high-integrity, incredibly astute reporter who couldn't be bought at any price. And throughout her career, she consistently refused to identify any of her sources whenever a government agency questioned her. And that might have posed a threat to the Kennedy conspirators. Now, if you look at her comments and columns in their totality, she seems to have put together some very important points that were very pertinent to the Kennedy assassination. One, there was a connection between Jack Ruby, Dallas police officer J.D. Tippit, who was supposed to have been shot by Oswald, and a Texas oil millionaire, probably H.L. Hunt, who many place as playing a role in organizing the assassination. Oswald was in too many places at too many times and about too many differing descriptions to be the movements of just one individual. And Oswald did have linkage to U.S. intelligence, and U.S. intelligence was nervous about it and covering up about their relationship with him. And Marina Oswald, who was herself suspected by the CIA being a KGB asset, knew the truth about Oswald, and if she ever told it, it would dramatically alter public perception of the assassination, according to one of Kel Gowland's columns regarding Marina. If people knew the whole story of her life and President Kennedy's alleged assassin, it split open the front pages of newspapers all over the world. Something was very rotten in Denmark, and Dorothy Kel Gowland knew it. According to one of the excerpts from one of her columns, even if Marina explained why her late husband looks so different in an official police photo and the widely printed full-length picture featured on the cover of Life magazine, it would cause a sensation. And this story ain't going to die as long as there's a real reporter alive, and there are a lot of those. She also knew the real Oswald story was being suppressed. According to another one of her columns, it appears that Washington knows or suspects something about Lee Harvey Oswald that they want Dallas and the rest of the world to know or suspect. Lee Harvey Oswald has passed on not only to his shuddery reward, but to the mysterious realm of classified persons whose whole story is known only to a few government agents. So the question has to be, why is Oswald being kept in the shadows, as dim a figure as they can make him, while the defense tries to rescue his alleged killer with the help of information from the FBI? That raises the question, who was Oswald? I was received a tape many years ago that I've only played on the air one time, and it discusses exactly who Oswald was. Kilgallen herself had strong links to the anti-Castro community. There was a rumor she was a CIA asset, which would make sense, and they regularly fed her information for her columns that originated from the same anti-Castro camps that Oswald was immersed in. She expressed foreknowledge in her columns that Marilyn had been having affairs with President Kennedy and Attorney General Robert Kennedy, and realized that may have been linked to Marilyn's death. She told friends that she trusted she was very close to discovering who really killed Kennedy. She explained to friends that the reason she hadn't gone public yet on her private interview with Jack Ruby was because she was marshaling all her forces into her new book, which she was very excited about and confident to be a bestseller. Now, apparently she was having financial problems and sold that book as the answer to them. So the rumor was she had a lot of information she hadn't yet put in print. And she also knew she was under surveillance. She just never said who. And as I said earlier, she gave a copy of her notes to a friend as a backup for protection. And she explained to close friends that she'd received death threats, and if certain individuals found out what information she possessed, it'd get her killed. Well, immediately before a trip she was going to take to New Orleans, she was found dead. Now, she had planned a trip to New Orleans. It was very cloak and dagger, and told friends she'd break the case within the next 5 days. She had pieced together some of the main players whom she believed played key roles in the Kennedy assassination, including David Ferry and Texas billionaire H.L. Hunt. And she realized that Ruby had also been involved, and she was investigating Ruby's connections to the Texas Mafia, which is run by Carlos Marcello, and Dallas police officers, including J.D. Tippit. She thought it was Far too coincidental, Ruby, prior to the assassination, had known Oswald, Ferry, and Tippit. On November 8, 1965, she was found dead in her apartment shortly after returning from Dallas, where she'd interviewed Jack Ruby and conducted her own investigation of the Kennedy assassination during several trips to cover the Ruby trial. She revealed secret transcripts of Ruby's testimony in her column. She met with Ruby, had learned of a meeting 3 weeks before the assassination at Ruby's Carousel Club, the Dallas Underworld's merry-go-round where the Big D mobsters wheeled around. Present at that meeting were Ruby, Officer Tippit, Bernard Weissman, and a fourth person. Now, it's a fact that when Dorothy returned to New York, she told friends she'd discovered Ruby and the slain Officer Tippit had been friends. They'd been seen together in Ruby's Carousel Club at a meeting 2 weeks before the assassination in the company of Bernard Weissman, who placed a JFK warning for treason newspaper ad in the Dallas newspapers November 22nd. And studying the Warren Commission report, she deduced that the meeting had also been reported to Chief Justice Warren and the identity of the fourth man, which she'd been able to ascertain, had been reported to Warren as a rich Texas oil man. That's how Earl Warren described him in the official transcript. She also said she'd discovered something that was going to break the whole JFK assassination mystery wide open. She told the same story to her next-door neighbor, her hairdresser, her agent, her publisher, the producer and host of Nightlife. Well, many researchers have suggested that a suspicious individual named Ron Pataki, a young debonair man who'd become very close to Dorothy, may have been involved in her death. He was accused of having links to the CIA and of attending assassination training. The implication being that his sudden friendship for Dorothy was insincere and actually just a means to gain access so he could help her suicide. Now, that's all interesting and leads to some explosive connections. You know, contrary to the common currents of human nature, which tend to tackle a crime by finding the killer and marrying him to the act, that's not really the way to solve a crime. It's first necessary and proper to correctly identify the crime. So many of the deaths have apparently been intentionally misinterpreted. So the question becomes, was Dorothy Kilgallen murdered? And if that is the case, now you move forward and lay out your case for who might have done it and why. The official version is that Dorothy accidentally mixed too much booze with her barbiturates, which killed her. No, posterity needs to evaluate each mysterious death according to how plausible the murder theory is. But this particular case is so blatant that it's clear the official version is not valid. Not only was Dorothy Kilgallen too intelligent and too cautious to be as recklessly silly as the official version implies, there are actually huge problems with the official story. Now, here's a question for that might tend to show you how ludicrous and logic lacking the official version is. If she accidentally mixed too much booze with too many barbiturates, how did all this come about? Who spent hours after she died, apparently, staging the crime scene and making some very amateurish mistakes? You know, the many incongruities present at the death scene bring to mind the words of the chief of the investigative support unit at the FBI Academy. He said, "Red flags. Offenders who stage crime scenes usually make mistakes because they arrange the scene to resemble what they believe it ought to look like. In doing that, offenders experience a great deal of stress and don't have the time to fit all the pieces together logically. As a result, inconsistencies in forensic findings and the overall big picture of the crime scene begin to appear. And these are red flags." Now, were there many of the red flags present at the Dorothy Kilgallen crime scene? Yeah, from all appearances, there are a lot of them. Even if you ignore the fact that a famous reporter working on the biggest story of her career is very unlikely to commit suicide or overdose, there are some other extremely bizarre oddities in the death of Kilgallen. Her body was found in a bed that friends and family knew she never slept in. Now, before you dismiss the gravity of that particular point, she was discovered by her hairdresser, who told his friend, "When I tell you the bed she was found in and how I found her, you're going to know she was murdered." Now, the bed in question was in what everyone thought was the master bedroom, which was off the main living area. But that was just for show, so people would think she and her husband were still having relations, to put it politely. In actuality, that was a set. She's found wearing what's ultimately been described as a peignoir or a bolero-type blouse over a nightgown. And that was a thing that those who knew her best stated were certain that she would never wear to go to bed. Actually, it's a blue bed jacket in this particular case, but apparently something hard, not even imaginably, Dorothy, and that's straight from her hairdresser. As the saying goes, you can bet that her hairdresser knows for sure. She was laying in bed with full makeup, her false eyelashes, which friends and family knew she would never go to sleep wearing. It was a book placed on her bed as though she'd been reading it when she passed out. But it was a book that she had told a number of friends she'd already read. She discussed it with them. She used a set of reading glasses to read books, no reading glasses anywhere near her. The laboratory testing on the glass beside the bed found near her revealed traces of one barbiturate. But the autopsy revealed she'd been killed by a cocktail of small doses of three different barbiturates, which formed a lethal combination when mixed with alcohol. It was made to look as though she simply took some pills and gone to bed and passed away. If that's the case, how, when, and where did the other two barbiturates get into her system? The air conditioner had been left on, which she never did at night because the house got unbearably cold, and it was very cold when her hairdresser arrived. A casual investigation, if there was any at all, was done about her death. It was soft-pedaled, rather than the serious investigation one would rightfully expect from the sudden death of a nationally respected news personality. Like many other investigations, it was in name only. Now, there's not nearly as much forensic information on Dorothy Kilgallen's death as there should be, even for a typical non-celebrity death, and what does exist is often vague and self-contradictory. Now, there was some information obtained regarding the lividity markings present in Dorothy's body, and they indicate the body was moved post-mortem. Cassie Purnell is the author of the Kilgallen Files, an online educational site dedicated to learning more about her life and sudden death. And Cassie has a special investigator zeal and dedication that lends well to years of specific research focused on one topic. And having a forensic background, having seen a lot of bodies come across the table, so to speak, made her very keen to learn about the lividity markings in the case, and she came up with whatever information was available. Her conclusions were the scene was staged. The autopsy findings showed lividity posterior involving the left neck and face versus how she was discovered, propped up in bed, her head tilted, which proved that she died in a different position than she was found in, a position that promoted an accidental death when in actuality she was murdered. Medical implications of lividity markings on the back of the left neck and face imply the body of the victim was actually not in a propped-up position at the time of death, and it's highly indicative that the body of the victim was moved after they were already dead. Her blood alcohol concentration was 0.15, which, though legally intoxicated by contextual standards, was pretty much just a normal late night after work in 1965 for a very sociable celebrity who was known to be a regular drinker. She was not by any means excessively inebriated, as was attested by witnesses who saw and heard her at the time period close to her final moments. Also noteworthy is the exotic combination of drugs that killed her. Three distinctly different barbiturates were found in regard to her death. Amobarbital, commonly known as Tuenol, Pentobarbital, commonly known as Nimbitol, and Secobarbital, commonly known as Secanol. An overdose of any of these drugs will cause unconsciousness in 5 to 15 minutes and death anywhere between 20 to 50. But in combination, they're particularly lethal, and quite interestingly, it was the exact right amount in combination to kill her. It was a level of only about 5 pills of each of these drugs. According to Cassie Ponhouse, it's interesting to see that the approximation of the amount of pills in Dorothy's system at the time she died is in line with the relatively precise amount needed to cause death. The amount of pills estimated in her system doesn't lean toward incredibly more pills than the minimum lethal dose, as most suicides by pills do. For example, her husband Richard, when he killed himself, he practically swallowed everything in reach. But that wasn't the case with Dorothy. Oh, no. And on that note, we've run out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. The same time. And we'll tell you more about our descent into the Banana Republic of the world. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.